Racism.
We will not bow down to
injustice.
Oh, no, we will not bow down to
exploitation.
What you gonna do?
I'm gonna stand.
Twisting the Knife, Alison Moyet. Before that, Surrender Dorothy by Chris Williamson from the album Blue Rider. And I'm Gonna Stand by the Byrne Sisters, not Sweet Honey. Someday I'm gonna get that album just to pay tribute to the women who wrote it. The Byrne Sisters do a very, very good version of it, but one should pay some tribute to the wonderful lady, Bernice Johnson Reagan, who wrote it. Anyway, good morning. You're listening to Heresy. It is 5:12 on a Sunday morning. My name is Sharon Griffiths. This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. And we are, I think we're still pretty far down on the scale as far as power is concerned. So I realized that anyone I gained, any audience I gained last week in their frustration of trying to sleep in the 174-degree weather that we were having, I was losing just as many, if not more, people by the fact that our transmitter is on the fritz, so to speak. I think the squirrel is striking for higher pay, and I really can't blame him, whatever. The little guy that runs around on the treadmill, you know, powers the transmitter. I haven't had a talk with the little one in a while, so I don't know what his or her demands are at this point. This morning, on Heresy, I am going to be discussing or reading about violence against women. And it's going to be an informative show, if not very entertaining, because unfortunately the subject matter is not exactly a laugh a minute. And as we know, I should hope, violence against women comes in all forms. It's not just rape. It's not just domestic battering. There are subtle and insidious ways of being violent against women. I think that rape, especially, should be handled as a hate crime. I know that with perfect justification, there has been an outcry in recent years on forming a bureau or forming a panel or some avenue of justice for crimes that are committed against specific groups, whether they are African Americans or Koreans or gays, lesbians, whoever. And I think that in a more general vein, for sure, that rape is a crime that can be taken as an act of violence against a specific group. A more generalized specific group, perhaps, than some of the other hate crimes, but a specific group nonetheless. And if people started reporting these crimes to the commission or panel or whoever is handling this hate crime stuff, they might be led to realize that, but who knows? It takes a lot of work to change people's minds or to bring people to new conclusions, and especially when you're talking about a governmental bureaucracy, and I'm sure that the bureaucracy of New York City at this point in time, in June of 1991, has a lot more on their mind for the time being than this, than hate crimes in general and crimes against women in particular. But who knows? Another thing that I have come to realize, not because I've participated in it, but because I read an article on the op-ed page of the Times recently, and I don't have that piece with me, that has to do with, this particular piece was inspired by the release of the book by Bret Easton Ellis called American Psycho. And if you'll recall, there was a big hoo-ha over the release of that book. The original publisher was so offended by the subject matter, which basically has to do with a real hardcore yuppie who, a white upper middle class, or he made himself upper middle class male young man who is obsessed with designer label clothing and Rolex watches and BMWs and all the wonderful little accoutrements of yuppiedom. And he also has this rather unfortunate habit of running around and performing unspeakable mutilations and killing women. He will unspeakably mutilate them before he kills them, and it's like, okay, fine. I, of course, had absolutely no desire to read the book after I heard about this. And this article on the op-ed page, and I wish I had it to at least credit the writer, was a woman, I remember that part, was discussing how there seems to have been a rather uncomfortable propagation of these serial killer slasher type movies and books, the most popular at this point being Silence of the Lambs by Thomas Harris. That seems to have, I don't read this particular genre of literature, but this one seems to have some redeeming value, Silence of the Lambs, from what I have heard, because it is a rather fascinating character study. But when you boil it right down, you get, when you take it right down to the absolute framework, what you get is a man who is screwed up psychologically in one way or another by whoever or himself or society or an experience he has had, and he goes out and maims, mutilates, and murders women, lots of them, in very revolting ways, although, I mean, a clean death is as tragic as a really horrific and grisly death to me. I mean, it's still, he was still dead in the end. So, it seems that these books and these movies have become unreasonably popular, and this op-ed piece was cautioning, or at least reminding or enlightening women in particular not to spend their money on the popularization, the popularity of doing horrible things to women. These things seem to be soaked in misogyny, and you just don't participate. Again, I'm a great one for non-participation in things that offend me. If you want to go so far as to write a letter, which in this day and age is a lot to ask, or make a phone call to a publisher or a movie company, if you can find the person and the number to call, please feel free. It's or just at least recognize what is going on. I mean, I was thinking tonight, I'm sitting at my kitchen table writing on an index card about the stuff I was going to say tonight. And I remembered back that this has been going on since, to me, I first became aware of it when the movie Dressed to Kill came out in the 70s. And that, again, was a very misogynistic serial killer who dressed as a woman. I think the one in Silence of the Lambs does also. And just brought sort of a horrible stereotype to light, and, you know, did awful things to women. And so I believe that when that came out, there was a little disturbance in the, a little ripple in the atmosphere about how anti-woman it was. But these, the books that are out today, and the one movie, the movie that was made out of the book Silence of the Lambs, good performances notwithstanding, shouldn't be given, I guess, the chance to become moneymakers and popular, because that only inspires the propagation of trash, as I have been led to believe that American Psycho is. People tend to cash in on stuff that is popular. So if nobody participates, if nobody buys the books, if nobody goes to see the movies, if the movies get bad reviews, certainly that will kill a movie, as I am afraid that is happening on a, in a totally different light to the movie Robin Hood with Kevin Costner. Just totally off the track for 1 second here. We're not talking about hate crimes and violence against women. In Robin Hood, there is none. As a matter of fact, it seems to be a rather intelligently... it handles women intelligently, let's put it that way. Or with some... with respect, if not intelligence. And the reviews are so bad, and yet the people who've gone to see it say such good things about it. I don't know what the campaign is, whether people are mad at Kevin Costner for being as independent as he is, or whether they're just, it's just some sort of spontaneous maliciousness. But don't believe the reviews. Go and see it for yourself. That's all I have to say. Now, another thing that's really rather heartbreaking in the, on the topic of violence against women, is that, as I said at the beginning of the show, there are incredibly varied forms of violence against women. Walking down the street and being the recipient of rude remarks is, to me, an affront. It should not be done. It is not done to men. Therefore, why is it done to us? It's not a textbook definition of violence, but it is a tactic that keeps women off balance and afraid and worried about how they look, how they present themselves. There's a horrible tradition among lawyers, defense lawyers, when speaking to a victim or a survivor of rape, wherein they catalog the woman's sexual performance and sexual lifestyle and lifestyle in general, practically from the time she hit puberty. And that's a pretty revolting thing, and shouldn't necessarily be dragged into it. It scares, of course, it scares a lot of women away from prosecuting their attackers. That in itself is a form of violence against women. It is meant to keep a certain segment of the population down and quiet, so that other segments of the population can go about doing as they damn well please. But there are many other more subtle forms, again, of violence. There is psychological violence. There is psychological battering of women that happens. You don't have to lay a finger on a person to keep them in fear. And that's, again, it's too hard to prove these things. So many women, unfortunately, sit back and take it. I have for reading material tonight an op-ed page from the Times, I don't know from what date because I cut it out and, of course, didn't cut out the date, that has to do with the need for shelters, for battered women's shelters in New York State. A clipping from the Star-Ledger from February 22, 1991, which talks about the Strengthened Domestic Violence Act, which was going to the Assembly at that time to be passed in New Jersey. Something from the Times of February 19th, where Maryland had decided to be fair, or at least to be more understanding about women who killed their abusers and pardons them. I have something on developments around the world, again, pursuing Robin Morgan's policy of sisterhood is global. World developments in nursing practice and violence against women. And then I have some a reading from a book. Its Spanish title is Mejor Sola que Mal Acompañada, which is an old Mexican saying meaning better off alone than in bad company, pardon my bad Spanish, for the Latina in an abusive relationship. And this is a wonderful book that came across my desk at my last job, and I Xeroxed some pieces out of that which have to do with the myths associated with women who are battered and the understanding of what the cycle of domestic violence is. There's a cycle, a circular pattern that has been known to be fairly common. Then I have two poems from a wonderful poet who I believe has won an award recently named Minnie Bruce Pratt. And these are early works of hers which I found in a journal called Sinister Wisdom, the back issues of which I had at my old job. And then I have a piece by Juana Maria Paz called From Battered Wife to Community Volunteer, Testimony of a Welfare Mother. And that's a fairly uplifting piece which I will leave you with. So, without much further ado at 5:30, seeing as how I only have an hour and a half to go and fit all this great stuff in, plus music, let me read you the first clipping, which is by Gwen Wright, who is the executive director of the New York State Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And this was on the op-ed page of the New York Times at some point before today, probably back in February when I was cutting all this stuff out, but I don't remember. It's called Women Who Need to Escape Men. Mary C.'s ex-boyfriend thought she was dead when he stuffed her into the trunk of his car until a relative found her and rushed her to a hospital. Thanks to inner strength and her determination to protect her 4-year-old child, Mary survived multiple stab wounds, a broken neck, and a fractured skull. Mary is in mortal terror of testifying against this man in court, but she knows she must. Fortunately, the local domestic violence program in Suffolk County will send an advocate to spend the day in court with her, will provide counseling and assistance as she pieces her life back together, and can provide counseling to her daughter, who witnessed the attack. Domestic violence shelters and programs are lifelines for people like Mary, but these programs are threatened by a 60% cut in Governor Mario Cuomo's budget. The proposed cuts threaten 15 years of hard-won progress by advocates of battered women and could very well cost lives. For more than a decade, shelters and programs for battered women have struggled to survive. It wasn't until 1987, when Governor Cuomo signed the Domestic Violence Prevention Act, that a stable stream of funding for services was established in New York. At long last, battering was recognized as the single major cause of injury to women, more frequent than automobile accidents, muggings, and rapes combined. According to the Department of Justice, 2,000 to 4,000 women are killed annually at the hands of their abusers. Approximately 41% of all women killed are killed by their husbands. Statistically, women are more likely to be victims of crime in their homes than on the street. The assailant is more likely to be an intimate than a stranger. In spite of everything we know about domestic violence, in spite of the need for more shelters and more services, the governor's budget would reduce funding for them from $3 million in 1990 to $1.2 million in 1991. This will mean that several of the almost 70 programs formed since 1976 will close their doors in 1991. According to the New York State Department,